When I'm introduced to audiences that don't know me, not this audience, the assumption is that I teach at a religious school, and I have to disabuse people of that impression. So what I explain to them is that I do not teach at a religious school, I teach at a Jesuit school. Right. When asked for further clarification, I answer by asking them the following question. Do you know the difference between a Protestant and a Jesuit? And when they don't respond, I give them the answer. The difference between Protestants and Jesuits is that Protestants at least know they are not Catholic. I first got interested in this topic when I heard the expression consumerism used in a pejorative sense. And in my naive state, I assumed that this was a disease, and the symptoms of this disease were to be seen all over by people with poor taste or who didn't know the difference between a one-star and three-star Michelin restaurant. Right? I soon found out that I was the one who was suffering from consumerism. And it was made clear to me that when I purchased my second tie, that was unnecessary. Right, and I could have easily spent that money on something more productive, like giving it to somebody else. In fact, the more I thought about it, I realized that even the first tie was an example of my being guilty of consumerism. So this forced me to go back and try to understand the market culture in which I live. And I'm going to identify what I think are the five most important features. I've put this together along with Gordon Lloyd in what we call the Locke narrative. There are any number of people who have identified one or more of these features, but Locke, to the best of my knowledge, is the first person to put the entire package together. There are a number of important people that have elaborated upon that in the 20th century. My favorite versions of this would be found in Hayek and Oakeshott. First feature, and I think these are important because when we go to the critique of market cultures, whatever I point out as a positive is going to be treated negatively by people on the other side. First feature, which I think is important, is the technological project, by which I mean the attempt on the part of humans to transform nature into something that is more hospitable to human nature. Now, this is a very, very different attitude from the attitude of the classical and medieval world, where people were focused on conforming to nature. That technological project requires or is helped by a free market economy because through the existence of private property, it expands the number of people who have an opportunity to contribute to it. A free market economy, in turn, requires limited government. The government is there to provide institutions that support the market, not to undermine the market, and certainly not to direct the market. The limited government, in turn, requires the rule of law, and the rule of law, in turn, requires what I call the culture of personal autonomy. So the five positive features are the technological project, the free market economy, limited government, the rule of law, and the culture of personal autonomy. The major criticism that's usually offered of this view of the world is that it somehow leads to inequality. One of the assumptions made by people who are glad that they live in a market society is that we don't have to worry about inequality. And the reason we don't have to worry about inequality is because we will have economic growth. This is the argument for overcoming the kinds of disparities that people talk about. A metaphor that perhaps captures this very well is the notion that a rising tide raises all boats, and that's what people are concerned about. And in fact, I think it's important to stress here that it's a mistake to try to be defensive about this culture. In order to be more positive about it, I want to introduce the following distinction. There are a number of people who try to live up to the norms of a market culture, and there are a number of people who fail to live up to the norms. Very often, the critics refuse to see that difference. So in order to make an analogy, to bring home my point, if you make that kind of criticism, it would be analogous to something like this. I can imagine somebody saying that we know that God does not exist and Catholic theology is completely false, and we know this because there are priests who sexually abuse children. of course, people will immediately jump up and say, well, they're the exception, they're the people who are not following the norms, etc. That is a perfectly legitimate defense. I would argue that the same kind of argument can be made for market societies. To talk about the people who are tasteless, perverted, etc., is not to describe market society, but to describe something else. And I also don't want to fall into the trap of glorifying traditional societies. I mean, to believe that traditional societies were somehow wonderful places is to engage in a kind of romantic fantasy, perhaps even a utopian fantasy. All right, now what about the serious intellectual criticisms that can be made of a market society? The first person to articulate these was Rousseau. In fact, every single criticism that anybody has ever made of market societies was made in the discourses by Rousseau. Everybody else was simply repeating the same criticisms in a new form. So if you remember the five features, it's easy to see where the criticisms are going to go. If the market society thinks that the technological project is a good idea, the Rousseauian critique is going to be that the technological project is a bad idea, and extreme environmentalism would be an example of the position that they would hold. They would not be in favor of free market economies. They would be in favor of the distribution of wealth or the redistribution of wealth. And their favorite metaphor would be trickle-down economics, because this is some way of making negative comments about people who have more than others. Instead of limited government, they will advocate a general will. This general will can have totalitarian implications, or it could be what de Tocqueville called the soft despotism that we're familiar with in the contemporary world in the form of democratic socialism. Law for them is simply an extension of politics, and they are certainly opposed to the whole notion of a culture that promotes individual responsibility and autonomy. They are in favor of something called community. It's not just that they like communities. It's that they think that being a member of a community is constitutive of who we are, not just an interesting fact about who we are. Okay, in the 21st century, the two people who espouse this position, the two most influential people who espouse this Rousseauian anti-market culture point of view are, of course, the French economist Piketty and Pope Francis. And I'm going to talk about a few of the features that they have called to our attention. There are lots of things that Piketty says, and there's a huge secondary literature on this, but one thing he did mention that caught my attention is that he's absolutely convinced that 2% is not just the new normal, but the upper limit of growth for all developed societies. Right now, I look in vain for any kind of proof that that's the case, but he simply states that that's the case based on his statistical study. And when I confront my fellow Jesuit faculty members about this, they reassure me that it's not possible for everybody in the world to have the standard of living of the American middle class. How do they know this? They just know it. You don't have to provide any evidence for it. I wish I had that kind of certainty about the future. Pope Francis has expressed these views, of course, in his encyclical Laudato Si. And if you, those of you who have read it, will recognize that everything that I have identified as a good feature of modern market societies is something to which he is opposed. Right? He is very big into climate change. He hates technology. He thinks that we're all buying into a kind of myth. Right? Now, this is important to note at the very beginning. Right? If the defense of a market society is that economic growth is the way in which we will eventually address many of our problems, what you have to do to destroy that is to argue that growth is not possible. That's what Piketty tries to do with economics, and that's what people who have turned climate change into a religion, including the Pope, I'm sorry to say, have done. It's really an argument to say, no, we shouldn't pursue growth because growth is somehow going to undermine us. So this is not simply a scientific debate, right? It is a heavily ideological debate. In fact, I would go so far as to say that Pope Francis has kind of sacralized the Gaia hypothesis about the world. Now, everything is an ecosystem. The entire world is an ecosystem. Human beings are part of this ecosystem. every living thing is somehow a creature that God loves. That would include, I presume, roaches in New York City, the Ebola virus, and such. I have grave reservations whether, in fact, that's the case. He is not in favor of a free market economy. In fact, he has nothing but negative things to say, or largely negative things to say, certainly about multinational corporations. He is not in favor of limited government. In fact, he's in favor of a world government. He certainly wouldn't be in favor of the rule of law as we ordinarily understand it, because law would somehow be an extension of politics. And his most important criticism is that it would destroy community. In fact, if you could see the argument against market societies is really the reverse. Community is who we are. If community is who we are, the law has to preserve community. If the law has to preserve community, then there's no limit to what government can do. If there's no limit to what government can do, then for sure markets cannot be free. And if markets are not free, that will ultimately put some serious limitations on entrepreneurship and the technological project. If I were to summarize all this from my perspective on Pope Francis, I would say that he has allowed the Southern Hemisphere to hijack Christianity. Right. And his notion of community is essentially the notion of a collective good. And somehow or other, he thinks that he himself or the people he hobnobs with are in a position to tell the rest of us what that collective good is. Now, this creates other kinds of problems as well, especially for Catholics who can't make up their mind whether wealth or poverty is a good thing. Frequently we're told that wealth is corrupting. If that's so, we should leave the poor alone. Look at how happy and how much better off they are. But then we're told we're supposed to transfer wealth from the haves to the have-nots. So there's a kind of fundamental ambiguity here, and I think part of that reflects the fact that a good deal of Christian theology was developed at a time when economic growth was not something that actually anybody could think about. A few other points worth making. Who are the kinds of people who like the notion of community as a collective good? Right? Intellectuals, people who think that they have a special role to play as a clerisy, right? That role would certainly be challenged. Certainly in the modern market society, intellectuals may be useful, but they're certainly not the only people who can speak with authority on what is important in any particular institution, right? And that is something that challenges them. In fact, if you look at the creative destruction, which was mentioned earlier, the notion of creative destruction does not only applies to economics, but also applies to the social world as well, right? If the social world is a dynamic process that continues to evolve like markets in a way that we can't anticipate, then there's nobody who can give you the final authoritative statement on what everything is about. So your attempt to be a member of the clerisy simply is not going to work. Two last points. One is that the critics of a market society never tell us what the alternative is. One of the classic criticisms that we've always made of Marxism is there's no post-revolutionary theory. If you read what these people have to say, they never spell out what the structure of the alternative society is going to be. In fact, they are totally parasitic on the existence of a market culture. If it weren't for people like us, they would have nothing to do or to criticize. The other thing is the normal assumption, which I think is a big mistake, is that we constantly have to apologize for why there are dysfunctional people in society. And too many of the speakers I've heard today reflect that point of view. Let me suggest that a good antidote to that would be to read Oakeshott's essay on the masses and representative democracy. From the time of Locke down to Oakeshott, defenders of the pro-market or liberty narrative have always maintained that the dysfunctional people in society are not the result of market society. What they reflect is an inability to function within a market society. They are the problem, not the market society. And so I would like at some point to shift the discussion to what's wrong with these people and what do we have to do to get them with the program. All right, so my final comment is to go back to consumerism. I'm reminded when I read the Gospels that one of Jesus's earliest miracles was not to turn wine into water. The miracle was to turn water into wine, and I'm willing to bet it was not Merlot.